Welcome back to In Focus. Brady Bowman, and I am now here with CourtTelU Rust University Distinguished Professor and University Distinguished Teaching Scholar at K-State, Chris Sorensen. Chris, a joy to have you on. We talked a little bit yesterday, or that would have been Tuesday we talked, and talked a little bit about the solar eclipse, and your research area is soft matter physics. And for our listeners, here's a couple of things listed on your website that you look into. Experimental and theoretical studies of light scattering by particles of arbitrary size and shape, solution properties, nanoparticles, so much more. So basically, I think you know what you're talking about on this solar eclipse thing.
Well, I've just been around a long time, so I've managed to list a whole lot of things I do. That's all there is.
All right. By this time, this is going to be playing Monday morning, so you'll be out of town. You'll be leading a lot of things this morning, from what I understand.
That's right. K-State has got a whole expedition going on up to Highland, Kansas, where Highland Community College is. We partnered with them in the Flint Hills Discovery Center. We've got 10 buses that are going to leave between 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the morning, filled with lots of people who are hoping to see the eclipse. And, of course, there are a lot of other people that are welcome to join us, driving up in their personal cars and so on. You know, Brady, I might throw another thing in, too, that the K-State Alumni Center has a major program going on. They're going to meet in St. Joe, Missouri, and St. Joe is going to be quite a hotbed of activity. I've heard rumors that 100,000 people are going to come into St. Joe and perhaps bust the doggone city at its seams. I don't really know.
We talked Tuesday about a lot of the scientific background of this eclipse, and it, really interesting discussion we had, and so we can rehash some of that. When we're talking about the eclipse, we're talking about a pretty awesome and interesting celestial event.
That's right. You know, people use the word awesome all over the place and rather casually, but this truly will be awesome. It will be awe-inspiring. You're going to, for a few minutes, if you're in the path of totality, you will stand in the shadow of the moon, which is really just a spectacular thought. All kinds of things will happen just before totality. It'll go noticeably darker. You might see fluctuating shadow bands on the surface of the Earth as the light flickers around, much like starlight flickers in the night sky. As the atmosphere darkens, all the birds will think, what the heck's going on here? It's time to roost and start singing their evening songs and fluttering around. We might even hear a few crickets and locusts come out. Cicadas might start singing, all that sort of thing. The winds probably will die down. You'll probably notice a reduced temperature coming upon you. And then during totality, if you look up in the sky, you're going to just see a marvelous sight. You're going to see a jet black sun because the moon has just moved perfectly in front of it, a perfect fit. And surrounding that jet black dot where the sun used to be, you're going to see the shimmering corona of the sun.
And have those glasses on.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's the neat thing. Have your glasses on the whole time until totality. So there are some things called Bailey's beads that you'll see right at the end of partial eclipse when you should be wearing your glasses. But once Bailey beads disappear, if you're wearing your solar glasses, you won't see a thing. So now it's time to take off your glasses and look at the totally eclipsed sun.
Brady Bowman here with CourtTelU Rust University Distinguished Professor and University Distinguished Teaching Scholar with K-State, talking about this afternoon's eclipse. I believe 1:04 is what we're expecting, right?
Well, yes, that's the good approximate time. You got to remember the path of the shadow is sweeping across the country at about 1,600 miles per hour. So if you're up in Beatrice, Nebraska, it's going to happen about 3 minutes after the hour. By the time we get to Highland, it's about 5 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. And by the time we get to St. Joe, it's going to start about 8 minutes after 1 o'clock. But certainly come the 1 o'clock hour, you're going to want to be very much ready for an absolutely marvelous event.
Now, this is an event. A big reason why everybody's so fixated on this is just because of the rarity. But if you could talk a little bit about that rarity, but there's also a certain perspective to this rarity that actually, when you look at it in more of a macro view, it's maybe not as rare as we think.
Well, that's exactly right. It's rare only because the area covered by the eclipse is so small. And, of course, the area of the Earth is very much larger than that. So solar eclipses occur a couple times a year on average. And, of course, they only occur during the new moon. We have maybe 12 or 13 new moons a year. So, but when they occur in only one part of the Earth or another. And the area covered, like I said, is rather small. I had a student one time ask me, why are there so many eclipses over the Pacific, solar eclipses over the Pacific? And you might think maybe there's some metaphysical reason for that, but in fact, it's nothing so esoteric. It's the simple fact that the Pacific Ocean is about half the total surface of the Earth. So in fact, half the solar eclipses occur then.
Very interesting. That's one thing that you mentioned that to me Tuesday, and that's one thing I really didn't think about up until you mentioned that. Also, if you could talk a little bit about, obviously we know that the moon is much smaller than the sun. So if you can kind of go back and talk about how it does, I guess to our view, cover the sun like it does.
Yeah, that's a good question too. And you're right. The moon is something like 2,200 miles in diameter. Whereas the sun is like 800,000 miles in diameter, so much, much greater. But the moon is a heck of a lot closer, too. The moon's a quarter million miles away or so, whereas the sun is 93 million miles away. And if you want to do a little math, which I know everybody enjoys to do,
you know it.
You could take the ratio of those numbers. You could divide the 2,200-mile diameter of the moon by its distance of a quarter million and do the same thing with the sun's diameter by its distance, and you get the same number, which means the ratio of distance or of diameter to distance is the same, and that's why they look the same size, the same apparent size when they're in the sky. So that apparent size turns out to be almost exactly a half of a degree. So when the half-a-degree diameter moon encounters the half-a-degree diameter sun, it blocks it perfectly.
When you look at the solar eclipse, especially like when we look at it now, we obviously have all this scientific knowledge that we've really gained over the past 50, 60 years or so, especially on this. When we compare it to what they knew in the past, I have to imagine that hundreds of years ago, the solar eclipse was probably, for some people, maybe a really frightening thing or like a very fantastical thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. But for a long time, our civilization has been pretty intelligent, too. There's always been a fraction of people who were keeping track of things and paying attention. For instance, if we were to go out the nights before this coming eclipse, early in the morning, we would see a crescent moon off in the southeast just before the sun came up. And if we go out the next night, we'd find that crescent moon had gotten a little closer to the sun. And we'd go out yet another night, a third night in a row, it would have been even closer to the sun, all the while its crescent growing smaller and smaller. And if you draw a line through the positions of the moon through those three nights or so, it would extrapolate straight towards the sun. So it really doesn't take too much imagination to realize that, good golly, the moon's headed straight towards the sun, and if in fact it's a little closer to the sun, it might go right in front of it. And so we shouldn't underestimate the abilities of our ancestors, even thousands of years ago.
And you know, that's true, and I was actually just thinking, just right after I said that, I was thinking, actually, no, I know better than that. I mean, it's amazing when you go back and look, like the times of Galileo in those days. I mean, they were doing so much of the research that we have now, that we use now, and they were doing it by hand. I mean, no real instruments like we have today.
That's right. As a matter of fact, it was Galileo's use of the recently invented telescope that he first applied to the stars that he managed to show that the moons of Jupiter indicated that moons could move with a moving planet, and hence our planet could move and yet still have the moon go around it. He actually entitled the chapter in his book, The Sidereal Messenger, Proof That the World Moves. Just an absolutely wonderful title.
Very, very good. Well, Chris, any other items on the eclipse you want to get to? I know you'll, by the time this airs, you'll be just hours away from it, and I know you're just super excited about it.
Well, I certainly hope I'm in Highland by then, because I hope I'm not hours away stuck in gridlock on the highways. That's our big concern. One thing, certainly, if any of your listeners, if they hear this now and they realize that they're within a couple-hour drive, I highly encourage they drop whatever they're doing. This is a possible once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And especially if you got kids or something like that, you got to get them, take them out of school and get them in the path of totality.
Chris, thank you so much for talking with us about this. Definitely a man in the know. On In a Man in Demand, right? You've been talking about this all over the place.
I've had a lot of talks, and I've had some great audiences, and I certainly science outreach is one of my very favorite things to do.
Chris Sorensen, the Cortell U. Russ University Distinguished Professor and University Distinguished Teaching Scholar at K-State. More on In Focus after this.